7th Applejack.
Looking to feed it to the end zone. A Husky touchdown.
Hawks tailgate begins Friday at 2, live from Pullman.
How about them apples?
On your home for college football Saturdays.
Wait on 3, 1, 2, 3.
Seattle Sports Radio 950, KJR.
I like Tony Castricone just fine. But I hope we have Bob Rondo saying, "How about them apples?" on every promo that's run on this day forever and ever and ever for the Apple Cup.
It might.
It definitely should be that way. Jerry DePoto is going to join us in just a few minutes, and we'll talk about the big Mariner trade that was announced yesterday after our show. The 12th Man Roundtable, Curtis Crabtree, who is just, he's punctual. He's here already. Hugh Millen is coming in. And Greg Bell is coming in, so we'll have some heavyweights in here to talk about the NFL and the Seahawks and what to expect this week. And it's funny, you know, I came to work yesterday, and I was so excited about the Apple Cup, and the Hawks game had been 4 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, like late yesterday, it's hitting me, wow, this Carolina game is going to be something. This is Carolina has popped up in interesting times for the Seahawks over the years. I mean, there have been some interesting games between these two. Carolina's who they played in the 06 championship, right?
Right.
The NFC championship, beat them there. And then Carolina waxed them in the playoffs a few years ago. Big one on Sunday, and we'll talk about that with the roundtable crew here in just a few minutes. We had a couple other texts on Thanksgiving disasters. One guy says, weak-ass penalties, tons of... No, wait a minute, that's football. I'm not sure I totally get this one, but I think it's funny. A guy, looks like this is a Montana guy, if I've got my area right. My wife cooks the turkey upside down every year. I don't have the heart to tell her. We've been married for 10 years. I mean, I guess it's funny, but it doesn't matter, right? The turkey's, he doesn't care if he's upside down. He's dead.
Well, I mean, it does matter.
Might make the breasts more tough.
How,
but I don't
why,
know.
Why would you think it matters?
I mean, they give you instructions. You got to do it one or the other. I mean, there's a thicker part. So probably to cook right, it would make sense that it has to be out.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. That's strange.
What's I bet he eats it.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, we've covered that. You know, it's going to be something if you're not going to eat the turkey. That's going to happen always. Thanksgiving coming up, and there'll be some great plans. Did you want to tell you had a real Thanksgiving tragedy once in Mexico?
I don't even know if I want to say it. I it's going to make me sound like a spoiled little brat. So first of all, I'm going to preface this by saying I don't even get to go on one vacation a year, but just about every other year, me and my wife go down to Mexico with my family. My parents have a timeshare, so all we have to do is pay for our flight down there, and we have a place to stay. And I'm like, last night I go home, my wife goes, do you even have a Thanksgiving tragedy? And I'm starting to think, like, not really. I mean, I got a big family, and we're pretty loud, so there's plenty of times where voices get raised, but I can't think of any tragedies where the turkey was burned and we had to order Chinese food. But, I mean, down in Mexico, there's been times that I've, you know, went in for my massage appointment, and they double booked, and I had to go back and sip on a margarita and wait for, like, an hour or something. So, I mean, that's about the extent of my recent Thanksgiving tragedies. I know that people are going to be like, you're a punk.
It's terrible. That's a horrible indignity. Now, when you go to, I'm going to assume, because it's in Mexico, but Cabo is, I'm not going to say Americanized, but it is a very popular American tourist destination. I imagine the resorts and everything down there, they do a big Thanksgiving
spread. They have Thanksgiving spread, and there's a couple other restaurants that you can go to that like to have the traditional American spread. So it's, you can get your turkey and whatnot. We usually go to Costco and buy a turkey. We basically kind of end up having the same thing there with us.
So Bucky's big Thanksgiving thing is he had to wait on a massage.
Yeah,
that's all right.
For me.
Mariners general manager Jerry DePoto is heating up. The Beacon Plumbing Hotline right now. We bring him in. We mentioned yesterday, if you can't find something to talk about this week, you really ought to get out of sports radio. And then the M's go off and pull off a huge trade that everyone's talking about in Seattle today. Jerry, welcome to the show. Thanks for doing this. Good morning.
Good morning, guys.
The fan reaction seems to be falling on two sides. There are those that are saying, hey, this is actually not a bad move for all the reasons that you'll, I'm sure, discuss. And then there's the other fan side of, yeah, I understand, but it feels like the M's are always doing this, and there's some frustration. I'm sure you anticipated that when you pulled the trigger on this. And it's not like you have to explain all 17 years that the M's haven't gotten into the postseason, but surely you had to know that there were going to be some people going, boy, it just feels like we're always doing this.
Absolutely. And, you know, so many teams have been through this type of step back, which is what we're referencing our current roster plan. So many teams have been through these kind of step backs and it's turned productive, and others have done it and it's not been productive. You know, what I can answer to is in the 3 years since I've been here, we've not done this. We've experienced, I think, pretty good days on the field. We've not been able to cut through to the playoffs. And frankly, that's what this is about. We are caught in the middle, and we are chasing three teams in the American League who are excellent in the Yankees, Red Sox, and Houston Astros in our division. And then we've got the Rays in Oakland, not to mention the Indians that we generally view as really good teams. And we can sit here and pound our head against the wall and finish with 89 wins and miss the postseason, or we can find a way to craft a more sustainable championship-type roster, and that's what this move is intended to do sooner than later.
Jerry, this is Bucky. I've heard people, you know, when it went off, then I got to get on Twitter and start reading all this stuff. And a lot of people want to complain about, oh, it doesn't make sense. You give up somebody that we've groomed and he's turned into a stud top of the rotation pitcher for three what ifs or maybe will work out type of things. I tend to stay on the side of, you know more about this than the rest of us do. If you don't, then we're all in trouble. But I truly believe you know more about it. So I want to give you this opportunity to kind of let people know all of the stuff that's working. Obviously, you're not going to give us all of this. But tell us kind of all the stuff that is going on, all the people that were interested in James Paxton and what his trade value actually was and why you feel like this was a great, great move and what you got in return for him.
Well, I guess to answer the last part first is clear. We talked to, I'd say, two-thirds of the teams in the league had checked in on James. You're dealing with a now 30-year-old and top-of-the-rotation pitcher. James Paxton, part of the reason we were able to get this package is he's generally been excellent, especially for these last 3 years, and gave us that opportunity. We had two more years of control of James' contract, and we are gearing a roster that is more likely to hit in 2020 or 2021. As we start to gather up some of these guys in their young 20s, like we did yesterday, like we did last week, and like we have done, frankly, over the last 3 years with guys like Marco and Haniger, graduating guys like Edwin Diaz and the like, we're building toward a roster scenario that should crest around that time in 2020 and 2021. And James Paxton, Mike Zunino, they're two-year control guys who just won't be here for that next wave. And we had to make a tough decision. It was a very tough one with both guys, homebred, drafted, came through the system, and really rewarded us in Seattle for the time spent and the investment. But we had to make a decision for what we think is the better good of the future of the organization, and this was it.
Jerry DePoto of the Mariners is with us, and we're talking about the James Paxton trade that the Mariners made yesterday with the Yankees. I forget the phrase you use, a step back, I guess is what you said, and that's different from tearing it all down. Now, I'm not going to try and outguess Jerry DePoto in terms of trades because you've always been very active, and clearly anybody in baseball is answering the phone when it rings and listening to things, but I'm not going to say, are you going to do anything else, but do you feel like this is enough to accomplish what you want in terms of your phrase, the step back, or would there be other things you're open to considering that would still fall into that without going to the full-fledged, we're going to tear it down to the studs and start over?
The tear it down to the studs model to me means that you move everybody and you start and you're projecting out 5, 6, 7 years where you're waiting for young minor leaguers, high-end prospects that you're acquiring at the A level to graduate and get to their major league core or become your major league core. That's not what we're doing here. With the core already starting to focus around guys like Mitch and Marco Gonzalez and now Malik Smith and Justice Sheffield, and it's a good group that are all in their young to mid-20s and should crest about the same time. It would be highly unlikely that we would not make more moves as we go forward. This is, you know, these are the two starting moves and what we hope is a reshaping of our roster that results in more of a championship look as we get to 2020 and 21. And You know, we have to bet on young players who are just starting their careers, and we're going to get the best years of what they have to offer. And we believe we got three more guys like that yesterday.
Jerry, everybody can kind of look up online and read what everybody's talking about, Justice Sheffield and Eric Swanson and even Don Thompson Williams. I personally, being an ex-hitter, I don't really care about the pitchers all that much. and I actually want to know, like, what do you think you got in Don Thompson? I know he's an A-ball guy, kind of flashed some power this last year, but how do you see him projecting, and when do you think the most, I guess the soonest possible time you could see him possibly helping this big club?
Very similar to Jake Fraley, who we acquired last week. Both guys are likely to start in Arkansas at the AA level this year. Like Jake, Dom had a breakout year last year in the low minors. 5-tool athlete. He's a fifth-round draft pick out of the University of South Carolina back in 2016. An above-average runner with above-average draw power. He's got average-to-plus arm strength. He plays all three outfield positions and generally plays them well. He gives you impact on the bases. I believe this year was a 2020 guy in the minor leagues, which is not something you frequently see. It's a real athlete, and along with Fraley and Kyle Lewis and Braden Bishop, we really start to build up a nice core of young outfielders to join guys like Haniger and Gamel and Malik Smith. And this is how you build a young core, and we're betting on our own scouting acumen to determine that these are the right guys to build around, and I'm confident in our people.
Jerry, do you? Sheffield's the number one prospect in the Yankee organization. My assumption is he's a guy who's going to be in the rotation this year if everything goes okay in spring training. Does Swanson fit that bill too? Is he a guy who you guys would project to being able? He was at AA and AAA last year. Is he a guy who you could see projecting into the major league rotation for 2019? Again, if he takes care of his business.
Yeah, with both guys, that is correct. I think in Justice's case, he's the more famous of the two pitchers, and he was the number one prospect in the Yankee system. He has widely been regarded as one of the top 25 or 30 in the industry. It's a real prospect pedigree. But Eric Swanson's performed at every level. He's done it through to AAA. We feel like he is just as major league ready, if not in some ways more, because the command is more refined with Eric right now than it is with Justice. But both guys have a chance to really impact our 2019 season. We're not committed to the idea that they're going to be on the opening day roster, but we're committed to the idea that they, along with Marco, at some point Logan Gilbert, start to form the foundation of what we think is a really strong rotation. And we're going to be patient. We're not going to rush them into something they're not prepared for before we get a chance to see them in a Mariners uniform.
Jerry, before we let you go, I want to see if there's an update on the another story that came out last week. I think people are familiar with it. Dr. Lorena Martin, she is accused. She's the team's former director of high performance and accused the Mariners of racism and sexism. Major League Baseball is investigating this. Is there any? I mean, the Mariners have released a statement, and I'm assuming that's where you stand now. But is there an update in terms of the investigation, in terms of timing of it? Is there anything new in this story from your perspective?
There's not. Obviously, it is frustrating for me personally, for the organization in total. There is an ongoing Major League investigation. Therefore, I'm limited in what I can talk about or, frankly, what I even know. Mm-hmm. But this is, unfortunately, the world we live in today, where social media is the court of opinion. I don't have a racist bone in my body. I've lived 30 years in the game. I don't think many or any would support such allegations and accusations. I feel badly for Andy. I feel badly for Scott. I've known these guys for a considerable time. I've worked with them. They're good people. And unfortunately, we're in a bad situation. And while I can't really speak to it, nor will I cast any criticism of my own, everybody has a right to speak their opinion. In this case, the accusations are unfounded. They're false. And we'll rely on our own character to carry us.
You are an innovative guy within the sport, and you've done some new things. Do you see filling that role of the director of high performance? Are you going to look for someone else who can do that job? Is that something you're going to do moving forward, or will you guys move back from that?
We created the program. You know, frankly, we're not going to ignore it, but at the end of the day, that's a bridge we'll cross when we get to it.
I'm open, Jerry, by the way, if you need.
Well, you are a director of high performance. There's no doubt about that. Well, Jerry, those are interesting days from yesterday. That trade, I'm sure it was not something that you did easily. Paxton was such a fan favorite. He has some local connection. Be interesting to see where his career goes. And I hear rumblings he might be a free agent in a couple of years. So who knows where the road will lead him. But appreciate you coming on and good luck with this. You can over-evaluate these things the first day. You know this, and time will tell how this works out for you. The best of luck to you on it.
Thank you, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thanks very much. Jerry DePoto from the Mariners, and we talked about it all morning. Is it, you know, it's easy right now to go, wow, what are they doing? Oh, my God. But then you go, well, hang on. Let's see what these guys are. And Paxton, I loved watching him pitch, loved watching him compete. I liked the way he kind of emerged last year and was able to go 160 innings. You wonder, could he ever get to the 200 inning mark? We'll see. But at some point you go, look, if you're going to try and get better, you can't trade your lousy guys and get better.
No.
You want to try and get better through trades, you got to trade the good guys.
Yep.
And unfortunately.
And then they're hamstrung with some of the contracts they have too. So there's some of the guys that are good that you could get something for, but nobody's going to pay them what we're paying them right now. So I think you moved a good guy in that situation, and hopefully only time's going to tell how it pans out.
The 12th Man Roundtable with Curtis Crabtree, Hugh Millen, and Greg Bell is coming up on KJR.
A lot of people are writing us off. A lot of people are saying that, you know, we're not going to be good or we don't have the talent, but we know that we have the confidence in the guys to do it, so it's going to be a fun season proving people wrong again.
Coming to you live from the Elliott Avenue Studios, this is the 12th Man Roundtable.
Every day we're spotting guys in different places to make sure that they get their opportunities to show what they can do so we can keep it as competitive as possible.
Brought to you by Carpet Liquidators, locally owned and operated since 1988 with 6 Western Washington locations. The 12th Man Roundtable with Greg Bell of the Tacoma News Tribune, KJR beat reporter Curtis Crabtree, and KJR's Hugh Millen on your home for the 12th man in the NFL, Seattle Sports Radio 950, KJR.
That's how it should be. You know, Bell has he works for the News Tribune, and Curtis, our very own sports radio reporter, and then Hugh is just Hugh. The quarterback. Hugh Millen.
Standalone. He's his own brand.
Let me update, and good morning to everybody. Chair. We've got the Hugh said it's like he's at the kids table.
He did.
It's Thanksgiving and Hugh's over at the kids table. Look at him.
Do I have to have a hot dog instead of turkey?
That's right. You guys will like this. If you haven't thought of this, here's a great idea. We've been doing Thanksgiving disasters all morning. This is my favorite text in a while. My brother-in-law always brings his own old cottage cheese containers to take home leftovers. So we buy extra cottage cheese and do a switcheroo, and he ends up with a bunch of cottage cheese when he gets home. That's the best thing I've ever heard. Your brother-in-law must be a rocket. Every year he's like, damn, I've got cottage cheese instead of turkey in here. How did that happen? Well, happy Thanksgiving early to everybody.
Good to see you, Gas. Yeah, well, thank you.
Great to see you, Hugh. Curtis, as always, and Greg, nice to have you. Greg's decked out in the Army stuff. I had my Indiana stuff on yesterday.
9-2.
You should have seen Averill cower when he saw me in my Indiana stuff. Averill's scared of me. Indiana. He knows I'm a live wire that could go off at any second.
Indiana's not 9-2 and took Oklahoma.
Oh, Dad, yeah. Look, no, we're 5-6. We're doing the best we can.
9-2.
Somebody's got to be
shirt of shame there, bud.
That's right. Here we go. Now we got an Army guy running the show. It's a nightmare here.
I want Indiana to just come out in those warm-up suits at the basketball.
Yeah,
that's right.
Just one time.
They've got helmets like that. We kind of, you know, Indiana kind of went. They kind of went Oregon. They've got a bunch of different looks. Really? And I'm
everybody went Oregon. I mean,
it's the way it goes.
Maryland is, they're the all-timers.
I like the block eye on the old block eye on the Indiana. But what am I?
Yeah, why are we talking over the Army fight song?
And for the Seahawks fans listening, like, why aren't you talking about the Seahawks?
9-2.
The Black Knights are 9-2, and they've got a couple of weeks off to get ready for Navy, who they've handled the last few years.
About time.
And Navy's down a little bit.
2-6, 2-7.
Listen to this guy. This is great. This is an Armed Forces preview is what this is. The 12th Man Roundtable, and it's been a few days since the Green Bay game now, which was, it feels like, Hugh, this game we've seen a million times under Pete Carroll. I'll say this. You could criticize Pete for whatever you want. The Hawks have been damned exciting during his run.
Yeah.
They generally don't blow teams out, and they don't get blown out. They're almost always, it feels like, in the fourth quarter in a game like this.
Yeah.
And more often than not, they've found a way to win.
Well, I laud them for seldom, if ever, having an emotional no-show. Somehow or another, Pete Carroll's brand of coaching it allows for these guys, and the result is, I should say, that these guys, they always play hard. Mm-hmm. And you'd say, well, come on, man. It's the NFL. There's only 16 games. This ain't the NBA. Of course they play hard. You'd think that, and that would be a fair thing to think.
Right.
But that's not what you see,
mm-hmm.
right? If you, mm-hmm. if you've been watching the NFL long enough. And so I think that the fact that they are always competitive, hey, this year, Russell Wilson's come under some scrutiny because he hasn't performed in the fourth quarter. But against Green Bay, it was Aaron Rodgers who blinked in the form of a 3rd-and-2 bounce pass.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as John Stockton, you know, like, where's Malone on that pass? Like,
right,
that's
right.
Inexplicable.
Yeah.
And yet he did it. And so at a time when they need to be great, Russell was and Rodgers wasn't. So, it was entertaining. And Pete Carroll's very comfortable operating in that. I mean, make me nervous as hell being that close every week.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
He just says, oh, we'll find a way.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you give him a chance to win by one or two. That's a, he, and you know, the compete thing. I remember when they brought him in, Curtis, when they brought Pete Carroll in, and that was his big buzzword at the first press conference. We're going to compete like crazy. And I remember kind of laughing at it on the air, going, well, it's the NFL. I'm expecting you to compete like crazy. But you know what? That has become a mantra for them, and it is something that they talk about all the time. And I know other teams do too, but it's part of why the Hawks have been successful, I think, is, whether it's artificially created or not, this idea that there is nothing but competition going on out there all the time, and maybe that's what breeds their ability to play so well in these close games.
Well, I think that's why Pete Carroll has seemed more energized this season, because there has been more of that true competition across the roster. Because, look, as much as he wants to sell Always Compete, Richard Sherman was never in doubt of losing his job.
Right.
Earl Thomas never in doubt of losing his job. You can go through the list of about 10 or 12 players that were not going to lose their starting jobs no matter what happened. They were the starters. They were the core guys. That was the way it went. This group had more of the unproven stuff. Like, look, you need to go compete it and earn your way and find a way to get it done. And, you know, if you step up to the plate, then we'll ride with you.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, as much as anything, I think that's why he's so enjoying this season as much as it is, even though they're 13-3 bound or anything like that. I think he enjoys the process of it, and the fact that this is a group of younger players that are starting to grow in the position and still looking like they might be able to get where they want to go at the end of the day. So,
and I thought some of what some of the guys said, and I think all of these guys who are gone are terrific players. Most of them are going to be Ring of Honor guys. Some of what was said, Greg, on the way out the door about his message, we're not listening anymore, it's a little unfair, but there's also some truth to it. And that's another reason Pete's probably enjoying this year, is you've got some new ears, right, and you can sell your ideas. It's a little easier because there is going to be a natural tuning out of things. Pat Riley talked about it years ago. One of the reasons he left the Lakers, he said, I got to find new guys to talk to.
Right. You win titles, you get paid, you get new contracts, and all of a sudden it's not as fresh and new, and you're not doing it for the coach. You're doing it for your bank account and what you accomplished in your brand. And that's true of any team. That's not just the Seahawks. That's true of any modern era Super Bowl champion team. Now he's got fresh ears that always compete, and touching the amen sign on the way out to the practice field is brand new to these guys.
Mm-hmm.
Arcavius Mingo's been in the league 6 years. It's brand new to him.
Right.
He's become an every down linebacker. Their starting secondary is completely new. All the messaging is brand new to them. And that has, Curtis is right, Carroll was beaten down by the end of last season. He's been much more revitalized, and it's because it's on him now.
Right.
It's back to being his ship. He has to lead with a bunch of sailors that have never been here before, and now he's the director. Last year, he was trying to corral the veterans who were running the team, who'd been here for so long, and it didn't work. We're going on. I was sitting here listening to you guys, and you, and rightly so, lauding them for the Green Bay game, and it was just amazing to me the tenor of this conversation compared to 5 days ago or 7 days ago.
Right, right.
The NFL can change that quickly. And the Sunday results that we talked about yesterday at 7 o'clock have brought the NFC, the bottom of the NFC's playoff race, back to the Seahawks. And all of a sudden, a team that was 6 minutes from being perhaps eliminated or on the cusp of their season ending controls their own playoff fate. That's how differently this thing can go. They lose in Carolina on Sunday. We're coming in Monday talking about what now. They win in Carolina, and they are in the number 5 seed. Not only just barely in, but holding the first wild card most likely. So that's how fine a line that they're sitting on right now. And a lot of it is their youth. A lot of it's their inexperience. But Pete Carroll's absolutely completely in charge compared to this time last year.
You know, 4 or 5 years ago, the Legion of Boom was on the cover of Sports Illustrated, and on the cover was a takeaway quote from Richard Sherman. And this is going to be a bad paraphrase, but he basically said, the Seattle environment allows me to be me and us to be us, and I'm pretty sure this couldn't be done at New England. This was in advance of their Super Bowl against Patriots, obviously. And I think those guys kind of forgot that. I think there were some pretty, you know, low-rent shots by some veterans that really appreciated a lot of what Carroll tried to do holistically to empower those guys. And, you know, for Michael Bennett to say, I was reading books in meetings, you know, I've seen, you know, you can stuff a book inside your playbook in a meeting, and if you want to read a book or a magazine, it looks like you're studying your playbook.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's been done, but what's the point in broadcasting that on the way out? And then the other point, guys, is so much is made about compete, and I do think this. I think that in training camp, you do see a pretty spirited, you know, when guys like Earl Thomas and Sherman and the leadership there, it was slightly elevated, but I think 90% of that is way overblown. There's competition in every NFL team. As Kurt said, you know, you can list the vast majority of those guys were not in jeopardy of their jobs. And you know, I think it's all manufactured. Every player in the NFL is in jeopardy. If he doesn't play well, the guy behind him is going to replace him. And so I think that this has been way overblown. It's like maybe you can just talk it into existence. But, you know, so I reject most of the whole compete and competition because everybody else is doing it.
And yet, back to your original point, there is an atmosphere that's created out there that allows the Richard Shermans of the world. And there are other guys out there that can flourish because Pete has that ability to be a coach who seems to be able, Curtis, to kind of separate what's important and what's not and not worry about if a guy wants to be a little different, that's fine.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's been able to gloss over the Marshawn Lynch wearing Cam Chancellor's jersey in a sign of support during Cam's contract holdout.
Right.
Richard Sherman blasting coaches on the sidelines and keeping things going in the right direction. The Earl Thomas pulled out and flipping off the bench on the way out after his injury in Arizona. All of that, there's been instances like that through the years we could, you know, spend much more time than this running through.
Mm-hmm.
And yet he still managed to keep the boat headed in the same direction. And, you know, there's other times where that could fall apart and, you know, the issues that would pop up would be too problematic. There's some coaches that would not have been able to bounce back from the end of the Super Bowl, for instance, and keep the team going. You might have been just ripped apart at the seams and, you know, that was a team that still made it back to the second round of the playoffs the next year, even if they didn't get back to the Super Bowl. So, all things considered, it's continued to press on despite all of these issues that have cropped up. And when you coach the way Pete does and allows the players to have the freedom that they do, these issues are invariably set to happen, and so you have to be prepared to deal with them when they do come along, and he's done pretty good job of that.
It's also a function of who he brings in. He brings in guys that a lot of other teams won't touch, guys that are chips on their shoulder, guys who undrafted for this team has for years had the most undrafted free agents in the NFL play for them. They've got guys like Barcavius Mingo, former first-round pick, discarded by three teams. Deion Jordan, discarded by three teams, another former first-round pick of that same draft, 2013. He cultivates guys who are mad and who play on that edge, and some of that edge shows up in ways that the average traditional fan thinks should not be how a team runs. That's how he's won. He's won on that edge. And sometimes that edge is Marshawn Lynch saying, I'm not getting on the bus to a playoff game and I'm not playing. And sometimes it's Richard Sherman griping at his and putting his finger in the face of an offensive and defense coordinator during games. And Carroll's bargain in his mind is, I'll take that for the winning.
Right.
And I'll take that for the young, inexperienced and cheap roster that I can build in my way with guys who will listen because they're happy to have a job.
Yeah.
Thomas Rawls is a perfect example of that. And that's how he's succeeded and cornered that market in the NFL. Now he has a reputation around the league of being the guy who welcomes those players. And those players that are looking for jobs want to look at Seattle because of the success Carroll's had with those players.
And he's done a great job, and I'm sure of this, that a lot, most of it is behind the scenes, but I bet once a week Mingo hears about all the teams it gave up on. Look at you. Everybody gave up on you, and look what you're doing.
Mingo himself talks about that.
Yeah, it's such a motivator, and Pete's not the only guy doing that, but that's such a motivator within a pro athlete. You know, how do you push a guy's button? It's by telling him they didn't think you're good enough. They didn't think you're big enough or fast enough or strong enough, and look what you're doing here.
In Mingo's case, much like Bruce Irvin, The rest of the league and LSU said he was a pass rusher, a one-trick pony, just like Bruce Irvin. And just like Bruce Irvin, Ken Norton Jr. and Pete Carroll have said, you know what, Barcavius Mingo, we're going to make you an every-down linebacker. We're going to keep you on the field on first and second. You're going to drop into coverage. You're an athlete who can run, who can jump. We're going to make you an every-down linebacker. And he's like, no one's ever told me that before.
Right.
And now here he is on the field all the time, passing and rushing. He is a fixture on the defense that could be here much longer than he thought he was when he was going to be here just as a pass rusher.
You think of all the companies that go through sensitivity training, and through that they say, hey, we're tolerant or we're accepting of differences. And Carroll clearly goes beyond that. That does not it accurately but not adequately describes his position. He celebrates it. I mean, he is pushing these guys to have their own personalities and to Greg's point, yeah, that there's a side to that. You know, you get all the benefit, and as I said, these year after year after year, you could count on Seattle's going to have either zero no shows or possibly a half of one, you know, which was far 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 above the median in this league, right? But there's a few times it kind of comes wobbly and he just kind of finds a way to navigate through it.
Well, they had a stretch of, 5 years before, right, between losses of 10 points or more. So
that's amazing, really, yeah, in this league.
That speaks to, as you said, their ability to go without no-showing games. So, and even since that one happened, which was the Packers game two years ago when Russell had the 5 interceptions, you really only had the Rams game a year ago where it truly got away from them then, and none this year. So, again, they're very good at playing close games.
And you know, Gas, an inch. Sorry, there's reports that Paul Allen got Schneider and those guys together and said, "Okay, what just happened after the Ram loss?" I that kind of surprised me. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it was something that we're led to believe was done in a constructive way and was taken in. You know, it'll be interesting to see with the passing of Paul Allen whether or not. That accountability that has been demanded, you know, where that's coming from. Could have that been a part? I don't know. I'd have to know more about the situation to kind of, hang a theme on that. But we just can observe the results. And in that regard, it's been good.
12th Man Roundtable rolling on KJR. We're going to talk about the Carolina game. We're going to talk about, I've got a couple offensive questions. I've got some offensive questions, so get some offensive answers ready for me. And you can text us. You got a topic you'd like to hear the Roundtable guys knock around, text it into us on the Heritage Distilling text line at 49451. More to come.
Washington State. And Minshew is tough.
The 111th Apple Cup.
Right, looking to feed it to the end zone. A Husky touchdown.
Hogs tailgate begins Friday at 2, live from Pullman.
How about them apples?
On your home for college football Saturdays.
Wait on 3, 1, 2, 3.
Seattle Sports Radio 950. KJR.
We're doing 3 segments with the 12th Man Roundtable. This almost felt like it was by request.
Well, I heard you mention Eddie Money in there. So.
Why not? I liked Eddie Money. I saw Eddie Money years ago. Yeah. We had Eddie Money on the show once, right? The celebrity prognosticator. Really? Eddie was on the show picking NFL games with us. Yeah, hell of a nice guy. The 12th Man Roundtable, Greg Bell, Curtis Crabtree, Hugh Millen here. Greg, let's start at that end of the table, and let's talk about the three-headed running back beast that we all loved watching on Thursday night, and when they've clicked this year, that's worked. That seldom is a long-term recipe for success. One guy is going to ultimately want more of the work. But for now, it does feel like this could be what kind of propels them forward this year.
And it's about to become 4. J.D. McKissick came back to practice yesterday off IR, or is designated to come back off IR. So he's got 3 weeks to practice before he comes back to play. And then what happens to C.J. Procise? And C.J. You ever remember him? He's still on the team.
Right. What does happen to him?
He's going to... You would think that finally they will let go of him. They don't want to do that because of his talent, but they can't trust him to be on the field. So yeah. He's got the same skill as McKissick, a pass-catching running back, a former wide receiver, so you would think they're not going to carry two of those guys. Mike Davis was the third down back against the Packers, because Rashad Penny became the number two back after his Rams performance. Chris Carson's the guy. Pete Carroll's in love with his style. The style fits. And it's not just the yardage. It's the fact that he's punishing defenders. But that style comes at a price. Carson's missed two games because of injuries already this year. He missed the last 12 last year with a broken leg. He has yet to prove that he can be healthy, which is why they drafted Penny in the first round, because they can't count on their running backs. They've had 3 years of running backs get hurt all over the place, from Thomas Rawls through the list. So, to them, three running backs makes sense, because you can't count on Carson to be there week in and week out and be a 30-20 carry guy without getting injured. But for sure, it's Carson as the lead back as long as he's on the field healthy because of his style of play. Penny remains the understudy developing, and still in the pass protection game is where he needs to catch up. That's why he didn't become the starter coming out of training camp. Davis is, you can tell the Seahawks trust Davis. They don't think he'll fumble, which Carson's done a couple times this year, and they think he will get the yards he needs to get. Maybe not as explosive, but he has a 100-yard game at Arizona as well. The Seahawks are the only team in the league that have three running backs with 100-yard days this season, which is why all three of them deserve and have gotten first back carries. It's Chris Carson until he gets hurt, and then it's everybody else filling in the gaps after that, and then McKissick can be the more dynamic of third down back than Davis can be when he gets back on the field.
Curtis, you'd love for a guy, I mean, the Hawks would love for a guy like Penny. Hey, use a first-round draft pick on him, come in, be a stud from day one. That's hard to do, especially at that position. Are they happy with his trajectory right now, with how he's, you know, the things he's doing to, I mean, got that run the other night, the start of the game was like, wow, that looks like a pro running back making that play.
Yeah, I think they are. I mean, obviously, I think you'd want a first-round pick to be a little bit more productive early on in his tenure, but when I talked to him here a couple weeks ago and wrote a story on him, the fact that, you know, both Pete Carroll and Penny talked about how much the broken finger set him back.
Mm-hmm.
And you wouldn't think that a finger injury to a running back would be all that problematic, but it wasn't the injury itself. It's the reps that he missed in practice over the 3-4 weeks he was out after that was, you know, lost time that he probably could have used. He mentioned the fact that he was, you know, played with mostly a fullback all the time at San Diego State. And so running out of shotgun and the different looks that Seattle did took some time to adjust to, and that was a month's worth of reps that he didn't get that he could have gotten. And so it's taken him time to get comfortable. He feels like he is now, and I think you're starting to see that show up a little bit more regularly at this point in the season. And so when it comes to the running back situation in general, though, I think it's as murky as ever. I wouldn't be 100% sold that they're going to move on from C.J. Procise here. J.D. McKissick is probably a little more skilled on special teams, might be able to get on the roster in that regard when he comes back. But when all said and done here, fourth running backs aren't going to get carries, you know, at least not anything more than a couple. So the role we're talking about here is going to be really limited, whether it's McKissick or Procise. You could have either one of those guys still inactive for games when all said and done. Mike Davis is going to be an unrestricted free agent after this year. Hypothetically, if you were looking for roster management purposes, you could move on from Mike Davis, too, just to keep both of those guys on the roster if you wanted to bring them back for next year. I don't know if the locker room would love that, for instance, but I mean, there's more than one option to go about here. And that's, we're talking about a limited role in general.
It's almost perfect, Hugh, that a guy whose personality and talent was so large as Marshawn Lynch was, and it's too bad, but it has taken them so long to, you know, replace him. And I don't know if they still have.
Yeah.
I'm rooting for Penny. He seems like a great young guy. I like his size. I like what he does. But he's got some work to do still.
He's still got to hit the hole harder, his vision and what have you. And I think right now the conundrum with Carson appears to be the better player and closes that circle of physicality and is more of a Marshawn Lynch, you know, knockoff, if you will. But I think it speaks to Marshawn Lynch's durability. You know, I've always thought that you know, fullbacks and linebackers in the NFL are really, really tough men. But running backs are the toughest. And there was a guy, Tony Richardson. You remember that name? He played for the Chiefs. He was the three-time Pro Bowler, NFL's all-decade team of the 2000s. The reason I reference him is he played about half of his career as a fullback, or most of his career. But he had some years there where he was a tailback, too. One of the only guys I could think of that would be qualified to answer the question. He was asked, what's tougher, playing fullback in the NFL or running back in the NFL? He says, no comparison. Running back.
Hmm.
He said, you're getting hit from ways. When I'm a running back, I wake up and I got
I got soreness in spots I didn't even know existed on my body.
Right.
And I remember reading that quote from him. And so so those guys are getting hammered. In, and Carson, you can't prepare yourself physically. His body is a statue. And yet it's the rigors of the NFL, and not everybody can sustain it. And Lynch had a, you know, perhaps God-given ability to be able to be that durable. We'll see what Carson brings.
The 12th Man Roundtable, one segment left, and we'll focus on Carolina when we continue as we roll into the 9 o'clock hour on Sports Radio 950 KJR.